Welcome to the Reality Revolution. Today, we will discuss ancient secrets in securing money and acquiring wealth. This is related to our episode on ancient secrets to the law of assumption. This is from a Rosicrucian text called the Rosicrucian Principles for the Home and Business. As I explained in that episode, Rosicrucians have collected a vast amount of amazing spiritual knowledge and have taught it for many, many years, going through periods of time in which they were basically sort of a secret society, and then going through periods where they were kind of out in the open. I have found some amazing stuff in Rosicrucian texts, and I especially like the writings of H. Spencer Lewis, who wrote about all kinds of amazing things. And I found some chapters on securing money and obtaining wealth using Rosicrucian principles, which adds to our prosperity revolution that we're currently undergoing in understanding the power of our minds to create wealth. There's slight differences with the Rosicrucian way of describing things. They often refer to the cosmic and inviting the cosmic, asking the cosmic. But it's still at the same time very similar, and you might find some little bits and pieces to add to your overall knowledge of the subject. Lewis begins by saying, one of the two most often desired gifts from the cosmic is perhaps that of money, actual cash. The other is health. It is strange indeed that in the ultimate analysis of most of the cases where petitioners are asking the cosmic for money, we discover that it is not the actual cash in dollars and cents, or gold or silver, that is desired, but the credit. There is considerable difference between securing credit in order to enable one to purchase, buy, or secure certain necessities, and the possession of the actual cash in material form for the same purpose. And from the cosmic point of view also, there is a considerable difference. We would hardly think that anyone believes that the cosmic conducts a bank and has in its vaults gold and silver, copper and nickel, as well as paper in the form of coins and bills of all denominations and of all countries. It would seem that only the child mind would conceive of the cosmic being able to deposit actual money into the hands of a petitioner, like raindrops falling from the sky. The moment we realize that the cosmic cannot deliver actual cash into our possession, but must bring this about through various earthly channels, we see at once that it may be that the cosmic can pay us in our financial needs in a manner quite distinct from delivering the material form of coin to us. Those who are aware of Rosicrucian principles will realize that in a great many cases, those who are seeking or asking for money through any occult, mystical, or psychological process may not be asking for what they really need at all. Let us say that I need a new coat and decide that I will buy it at a certain store for a certain price. In order to do this, I must either have the actual cash in my hand or be able to pay for it through credit. Of course, it is preferable that I earn the money and secure the coat through my own efforts, as the cosmic and all natural law intends. But let us say that right now I need the coat and do not have the money or credit to purchase it. Therefore, I proceed to concentrate upon the cosmic to give me the actual money or provide the credit so that I can pay for the new coat. My entire concentration is upon the amount of money that I believe I need. The purchase of the coat or the necessity for having the coat is of secondary consideration. However, if I proceeded properly, the coat would be the primary consideration, and whether I purchase it with actual cash, paid for it by credit, or it was given to me by a friend would be immaterial. I would be glad to leave the arrangement to the cosmic, feeling quite satisfied that the cosmic would see to it so that I receive the coat. However, there are instances where the necessity for money in some form or for credit to an equivalent amount is the paramount desire. And these occasions require as much serious consideration on the part of the mystic as any other necessity or desire of a legitimate nature. From the cosmic point of view, the use of money as it is used today is fundamentally wrong and is a method or means arbitrarily established by humanity for the purpose of getting around and avoiding most of the ethical principles established by the cosmic. I will touch on this subject in another part of these lessons, but it should be kept in mind that the cosmic generally is not in sympathy with the use of money. And whenever and wherever it can bring about the desired results without recourse to the use of money, it will do so. Therefore, we will presume that petitioners who are seeking money with the help of the cosmic will have reached the conclusion that they must have money only after analyzing their necessities very carefully and knowing positively that nothing else except money in some form or the equivalent credit will serve their purpose. Now, there are two ways by which most petitioners expect the cosmic to help them receive money. The first way is in asking the cosmic to help them borrow what they need from a financial institution or from someone they believe is financially capable of lending them the amount. The other way is in asking the cosmic to help them collect either an amount that is justly owed them or which they expect through the settlement of some estate, will, legal paper, or other form of benevolence. We must examine each of these situations separately and consider the proper methods whereby mental or mystical laws can be used to help bring about the desired results. When money is owed to you and you cannot collect it because of the indifference of the temporary inability or stubbornness on the part of the person who should pay it, then you may rightfully and ethically ask the cosmic to help you secure what is justly yours. I must warn you, however, that if there is even a fair reason for the debtor to hold back the payment while some investigation is made or while an adjustment is made or until you comply with some conditions, then you cannot expect that the cosmic is going to aid you by setting aside the rights and interests of the person who owes you the money and force the person to make an immediate settlement with you against his or her own best interests. It has been found in many cases that where Jones owed a bill of $1,000 to Smith, and Smith was asking the cosmic to force Jones to pay the money right away, that Jones was holding up the payment of the sum because Smith had not fully complied with the conditions that brought about the $1,000 obligation. It might also have been that Smith was not willing to concede some point or agree to some just and proper point previously arranged, or that Smith was perhaps attempting to secure the money in a shorter period than had been agreed upon. In such cases, the cosmic will not act differently than a judge in any court would act if he or she knew both sides of the case. The cosmic will insist upon being fair to everyone, and it is simply impossible for petitioners to come to the cosmic with their requests and desires, thinking that they can hold back some facts about the matter and fool the cosmic into granting them their special wishes immediately and without investigation. If you will stop a moment, you will realize that the cosmic, if it has any mystical, universal mind and power at all, is just as familiar with the reasons, demands, and rights of the person who owes the money as with the person who desires the money. So we have found that petitioners seeking the payment of money that they claim is owed them must approach the cosmic as one must approach a court of law with clean hands. But if the money is justly due you, and there is no reason for its non-payment, except the indifference or stubbornness or forgetfulness of the person who can and should pay it, then you concentrate upon the cosmic and with patience petition the cosmic to intercede for you and see that your debt is paid. As to what method to use in concentrating for such a purpose, I will have more to say briefly. In asking the cosmic to bring money to you that you believe is coming to you, or should come to you through an estate or court settlement, a will, legacy, or donation of some kind, we find that here again petitioners must be sure that they are justified in assuming and believing that the money will be given to them by the giver's own volition, but that the whole affair has been delayed through forgetfulness, indecision, or something of that kind. In this latter case, we will see an analogy with the former case. Petitioners must again come into the court with clean hands. They must be receptive and ready to receive the money they desire. It must be free from entanglements that are unethical, and it must not be money that will bring pleasure to the petitioner alone and bring sorrow, suffering, and regrets to others, for in such cases, the cosmic will not think of giving its aid to the carrying out of a wish or a gift or help of any kind that will make just one or two happy, while it makes many others sad and unhappy. Of course, there are those cases where people petition the cosmic for some money to meet an emergency, when they have no definite idea where the money may come from, because no one owes them any particular amount, and they do not expect any money through a legacy or a donation of any kind. Such a situation is a very difficult one in which to give advice and suggestions. In a great many cases of this kind, the person soliciting the money is not warranted in expecting money from any source, and certainly is not warranted in asking the cosmic to create an immediate situation wherein the petitioner is suddenly made the beneficiary of cosmic gifts, which have not been earned, arranged, or donated in any way. Speaking in a general sense, the securing of money through cosmic aid reduces itself to a form of concentration that is simple and effective. After having determined that the actual money is what is needed and not the things which are to be purchased with it, then the petitioner should decide what is the precise amount or the smallest possible amount that will meet the conditions. Not too much or not more than is necessary should be asked. On the other hand, a sufficient sum should be included in the asking to take care of the immediate as well as the longer term needs. This amount of money should be visualized in its figures and not in its form. In other words, the money should not be visualized as gold or silver or bills or in any particular denomination or form of currency. If $1,000 is desired, the figure or amount of $1,000 should be concentrated upon, regardless of whether that $1,000 will eventually show itself in the form of a check, a draft, a money order, actual cash, or a savings bond. And every morning, every noon, and every night, at a time just preceding the meal, one should attune oneself through relaxation and concentration with the cosmic and universal mind, and hold in one's mind at the same time the thought and impression of the amount of money that one needs. After doing this for a few minutes, with the eyes either open or closed, the person should dismiss the matter by the simple statement of, "This I ask of the cosmic," and then go about the business of the day, unconcerned about the coming of the money or the method by which the cosmic will answer the petition. Doing this for 4 or 5 days will unquestionably bring some results in the process, leading to the realization of the amount of money desired. In addition, if this amount of money is justly owed to you by a particular person, you should concentrate on that person in connection with the $1,000 and hold the picture of that person in your mind, along with the amount of money, so that the cosmic will receive directly from you an impression of the person who should pay the money to you. Again, I must warn you about the necessity of being sure that the money is justly owed you at the moment, and that the delay in receiving it is not just a delay, and also that you are entitled to its immediate payment without further delay. Of course, after what I've explained previously, you will not attempt to visualize how the cosmic will make the person pay you, or just what hour it shall be handed to you, or brought to you, or placed to your credit, or otherwise made available. Such concentration upon the amount of money and the person who owes it 3 times a day for a number of days will undoubtedly help to bring about an attitude on the part of the person who owes the money that will lead to action and the eventual realization of your desires. In the case where money is desired from an estate or from some person who is settling an estate, and where there is a delay or a hesitancy or a possible frustration through so-called legal red tape, you must be sure that there is no just reason for the delay, and that you are fully entitled to have the cosmic come to your rescue and make immediate settlement. If you are sure of this point, then you may again visualize the amount of money desired. And with that visualization, keep in mind the person or the condition surrounding the delay, with the idea that the cosmic will contact the right person or persons and set into action the process that will lead to the proper settlement. It has been found that in these cases where a referee or a judge or any individual is attempting to make up his or her mind and decide whether to do a thing or not to do a thing, or whether to grant a request to one person or to another, that if one appeals to the cosmic to bring about a decision favorable to the petitioner, the cosmic will affect the hesitating mind of the referee, judge, or other person and cause him or her to suddenly make a decision in favor of the person who is concentrating on the cosmic for cooperation. I have known personally of many cases where judgments or decisions have been held up for months, and in some cases years, because a certain person could not come to a definite decision and was hesitating until a proper decision could be reached. A few days' concentration, however, upon this person and upon the necessity for an immediate decision caused the person to suddenly come to a conclusion that had been delayed for too long, and a favorable decision was then rendered to one of the parties concerned. In several cases, an investigation afterwards or an interview with the person who made the decision revealed that during the evening hours, while in relaxation, the individual suddenly had an impression that he or she must come to a certain conclusion that appeared to the individual to be absolutely fair and just. You can rest assured that when the cosmic takes up your case and impresses someone who has the right to decide about making a decision in your favor, it is because the cosmic knows that such a decision is just and correct. In other words, the cosmic will not make a judge or referee or anyone else decide in your favor just because you petitioned the cosmic to do so, and the other party did not make such a petition. We see by this that if both parties concerned in such a matter were to petition the cosmic and each ask for a favorable decision, that the cosmic would have to decide and impress the hesitating judge with what is his or her duty and what is proper in the points of question. As for borrowing money, many other things must be taken into consideration. The cosmic is not loath to aid in the matter of borrowing, provided there is a good and justifiable motive behind the desire to borrow, and the borrower has proved to the cosmic and to others that he or she is trustworthy and repays whatever amount is promised to be repaid. Again, we realize that the cosmic will not aid in any injustice or in any matter that will be unfair or injurious to another person. If, therefore, you are attempting to borrow money without having any real need for the money, or if a real need exists without having any ideas as to where, how, or when you'll be able to secure sufficient money to repay what you borrow, you can rest assured that the cosmic is not going to aid you in the matter. If, on the other hand, in your previous transaction of small or large amounts, you've always repaid what you borrowed, always given back what has been loaned to you, always met your just obligations with every endeavor to fulfill what you have promised to do, then you may be sure that the cosmic will aid you if there is a real need for the money you are seeking. You cannot go to the cosmic with a vague hope that the borrowed money will be repaid sometime in some way, or with the idea that when it comes to you for you to pay the money back to the persons you have borrowed it from, you will appeal again to the cosmic to deliver some more money to you in order that you may square your left hand while you get ready to hold out your right hand for something more. In seeking the aid of the cosmic in borrowing money, it is presumed that you have in mind some person or institution, such as a bank or financial institution, from which to borrow the money. That in the case of a person which such person can loan the money to you without injury to himself or herself, that you will make it a regular business transaction, clean cut and of proper and ethical form. With these points being true, you may then visualize the amount of money and the person or financial institution from which you desire to borrow it. By concentrating upon such a visualization 3 times a day, you may count upon the cosmic's help, provided, of course, you have made the regular earthly, physical, material appeal to the person or financial institution in addition to concentrating upon the cosmic. It is not to be presumed that you may want to borrow some money from Mr. Smith and, without ever letting Mr. Smith know you want the money, proceed to concentrate upon the cosmic and ask the cosmic to urge Mr. Smith to come over to your house and hand you the money. as though he were being forced to do that by the cosmic. In all cases of borrowing, it is proper that you should make your appeal and request to the person first in a regular way and acquaint them with the knowledge that you wish to borrow from them. In attempting to borrow money from anyone, it is always advisable to use the utmost frankness and extreme specificity to approach any person or institution, such as a bank or loan association, and ask for an indefinite amount of money and in a way that demonstrates that you are not familiar with what you want and why you want it, will surely bring a negative result. And to be evasive in your answers will likewise jeopardize your success with any person or institution, just as it should with the cosmic. It is understood, of course, that borrowing money is considered to be an ethical process, and many institutions and persons earn more money by loaning money. Banks would cease to exist and would go out of business if they did not loan money as well as receive money from persons who place it on deposit in their care. A bank's only real excuse for existing is to receive money from depositors and then loan and invest that money in a diverse way so that it will earn an income and produce more money. Some persons have money which they are willing and ready to loan under certain conditions, and just as with banks, such persons demand the utmost frankness and security. In talking to the manager of one of the largest loan associations in America, the manager frankly told me that in their institution, where millions of dollars are loaned through the various branches every month, a borrower's apparent stability and integrity are major factors in deciding whether or not to make the loan. Of course, all the necessary forms are filled out and interviews conducted. However, this manager told me that such procedures and papers usually prove to be of no value whatsoever if the borrower lacks integrity. With this loan association, and with individuals and financial institutions throughout the world, the hesitating, evasive borrower is given a negative answer in the mind of the person or entity who has the money to loan, long before any words are ever spoken. The shifting eye, the hesitating voice, the indefinite explanation are earmarks of irresponsibility. When borrowers are quite positive and definite about why they need the borrowed money, what they intend to do with it, and when they expect to pay it back, they will find a ready listener and ready money at their disposal. Most loan associations, banks, credit unions, and persons who make a business of loaning money are interested not only in the borrower's integrity, but in the purpose for which the money is being borrowed. You can well imagine that neither a bank nor an individual would loan money to a person when that person says he or she wants to use it for gambling or betting at the racetrack or for some other questionable or irregular form of speculation. Everyone who has money to loan would hesitate to loan it to a borrower to buy luxuries instead of necessities, clothing, food, the payment of rent, doctor's bills, the purchase of material for business, the investment of money into a growing and successful business proposition, the buying of tickets to travel to some point for business purposes, the buying of a home that is a good real estate investment, are generally considered good motives for borrowing. Borrowing money for the college education of one's children is often considered a good investment. While on the other hand, to borrow in order to enjoy a pleasure trip to an exotic, faraway country might be considered a risk, and at the same time indicate that the person asking for the money has little or no sense of business values or personal priorities. Every firm or individual who loans money expects interest at the legal rate or sometimes a little higher. Very few persons are willing to take their money out of the bank where it is earning 4 or 5% and loan it to someone on the promise of securing 6%. The risk of loaning their money plus the trouble of collecting it and the delays in having the installments met properly so that they would bear the proper amount of interest would more than offset the benefit of an additional 1% or 2% that they would secure from the borrower instead of from the bank. So you must be prepared, in many cases, to pay more than the usual rate of interest if you expect anyone to take a risk of this kind. You need not feel that you are damaging your integrity or your standing in a social or business way by borrowing money. For many of the larger firms, the most successful business institutions, and the most prosperous individuals find it necessary to borrow money from their banks or from other persons at times in order to expand their business or carry on a special deal in emergency. What will hurt you more than borrowing money is failure to keep your promises regarding the making of return payments, what will injure your prospects of securing borrowed money more than anything else is the record of the manner in which you have lived and the spent money when you have had it. Persons who have had plenty of money or sufficient money at one time or another and have squandered it for purposes that are not ethical cannot expect to have others loan them more money. All these things are taken into consideration by the cosmic as well as by the human mind. Therefore, in asking the cosmic's cooperation, you must be absolutely sure that you are appealing with clean hands, and you must have made your solicitations to the persons or institutions in the usual way before you ask the cosmic to help bring it about. The cosmic is not going to communicate with banks all over the country and tell them you want some money and that one of them should loan it to you, but the cosmic will help, if you are worthy and deserving of the loan, to impress upon the minds of the persons who can make the loan that you are worthy and that the loan should be made. And it will even go to the extent of urging them to make the loan more quickly or with less delay than usual. In securing money for business purposes, always be sure that your business venture is one that is really capable of becoming successful, paying concern. Fantasies and purely speculative schemes are neither supported by the cosmic nor bankrolled by financiers and investors are usually reluctant to invest in pursuits that are highly speculative and risky. I recall how years ago I was approached by some people with ideas for building experimental aircraft that were simply so ridiculous that one could hardly keep from laughing, and yet, with no aeronautical or engineering background, these speculators expected someone to loan them thousands of dollars to build what was only a fantasy or daydream in their minds. If you haven't built or designed airplanes or worked on them or piloted them, then you cannot expect that your speculative and untried ideas about how to further develop aircraft will attract financial backing. On the other hand, if you've worked in the manufacture of airplanes for a number of years and have had considerable experience flying them and have discovered through experimentation, building of models and testing that you have some new and better ideas about designing airplanes, you might be able to find financial backing. Here's how we can apply these important principles to the present day. In order to secure financial backing for projects and business ventures, you should have the education, training, or practical experience appropriate to the business venture or profession that you want your investors to support. This is not to say that there are occasional exceptions where someone with little training or experience, but with an inventive mind and an outstanding idea for a new product, is able to attract the rapt attention of those with money to invest. But this is the exception rather than the rule. For example, if you are a realtor and have succeeded in your profession and now have an idea that you would like to open a pharmacy because you believe there is more money in that business, do not expect anyone to agree with you in your decision and advance the money to start you in the pharmacy business, unless it is someone who does not care what happens to their money. But if you've been a successful pharmacist and you wish to move into a new neighborhood and open a larger pharmacy where there is little competition and every possibility of success, you will find others ready to help you with your plan. On the other hand, if you're a successful realtor and you would like to expand your realty business by taking advantage of further training toward becoming a broker, or perhaps moving into the mortgage end of the business, or even opening a second realty office, your proven track record should help you in securing financial backing for your plans. There is plenty of opportunity for the cosmic always at work, and those who are attuned with the cosmic know that there are always new ideas, new possibilities, and new ventures ready to come into manifestation through the application of cosmic law. Therefore, if you're a good accountant or hairdresser, baker or engineer, or whatever your profession, you can secure money to help you improve the business you're in, provided you're honest, skillful, and dependable, and the cosmic will help you in all these legitimate propositions, and it will silently smile by negative action at the unrealistic ideas of the impractical dreamer. The second aspect that late Lewis discussed is the attainment of wealth. Contented in life indeed is the person who has no desire for the attainment of wealth. Few there are who do not have this desire to some extent, or who do not express it in some form. Fortunately, not all of us measure wealth by the same standard, nor do we desire richness in the same measure. Regardless of what we may possess or what may be our privilege to enjoy, most of us seek some things in abundance, and that abundance may be our wealth. Before taking up several points of a practical process which will enable us to bring wealth into our possession, let us consider what constitutes wealth for the average human being. It may be trite to say that one person's wealth may be another's burden, and what one person cherishes as a rare and costly gift may be of no value to another. But it is true nevertheless, and there seems to be but one material thing that, through common acceptance by persons of all minds, constitutes wealth, and that is money. However, there is one immaterial possession or blessing which most of us enjoy, and which by common consent also is considered as the equal of wealth in any form, and that is health. The power of money in the world today is unquestionably a curse for those who do not know its real place in the scheme of things and who cannot relegate it to its proper place. Previously, I said I would speak about money, and this is my opportunity. If there were no money in the world, or no material thing that represented wealth, or had the power of fictitious valuation, health, and the freedom of existence would constitute the real wealth of every human being. In the proper scheme of things, human beings should labor to assist in producing and materializing the things necessary to live in the world. There should be no other motive for our daily labor, no other incentive for our dreaming and planning, than to assist in the carrying out of God's constructive work. We should feel that we will share in the world's blessings with all beings. We should know that of what we assist in producing, a portion will be enjoyed by us, and a portion will be enjoyed by our children or elders who are too young or old or incapable of producing. We should know that unless we contribute to the universal effort and take our proper place in the world, we cannot hope to enjoy the blessings of the universe, nor to indulge in the beneficent joys resulting from the labors of others. This is no utopian plea, nor political doctrine. It is merely the mystical viewpoint of life as it should be. However, people have learned that they may enjoy life's blessings and indulge in the necessities as they understand them, by buying them with fictitious symbols which have the power to secure those things which have not been earned or paid for. Thus, some may labor diligently, and even to great extremes, to keep body and soul together and to provide the bare necessities for their families, while others may labor not at all, nor produce, nor even plan or create, but live a life of laziness and indolence. Yet through an inherited possession or unfair scheming, the latter are able to buy with the gold they have not mined from earth, or with metals that they have not labored to extract, or jewels they have not physically produced, such luxuries, privileges, and such abundant supplies as permit them to flaunt their extravagant wealth, while others cry for the things these individuals have cast aside. It is unquestionably true that the average man or woman who finds life devoid of the necessities or luxuries, and whose longing is for wealth in some form, is a victim of the human-made process of rewarding labor with money or compensating effort with symbols of fictitious value. If money were not the thing with which the necessities and luxuries of life could be secured, then few indeed would be without that which they need most. It is neither the sluggard or indolent person, nor the person who need not work or labor, who must generally petition the cosmic or praise to the God of all beings to aid him or her in attaining wealth. It is the man or woman who is laboring industriously, consistently, and fairly. It is the person who is devoting most daytime hours to laboring by the sweat of the brow and by the torment of the body. It is the one who is striving in every honorable way and against seemingly insurmountable obstacles to earn and deserve the necessities of life. Those who find the battle against poverty and sorrow, most difficult one, should, without losing faith or hope, without giving up their tiresome efforts, appeal to the cosmic and to the higher laws of the universe for aid and assistance in securing for themselves and those dependent upon them that which will bring them joy, with their health and happiness, with their necessities. Such people seek to attain wealth, and theirs is a wealth that is deserved, and their desires and petitions should be answered. Among the practical considerations we must analyze at this time are the facts that material wealth does not always bring into our lives the real wealth we seek, and that very often we unconsciously associate the importance of money with thoughts about our needs. In speaking with hundreds of men and women who believed that the attainment of wealth was their real ambition, we have found that in nearly every case, money was desired in order to secure or purchase, or even attract other things which it was believed could not be secured or attracted except through the power of money. Previously, I have tried to show that petitioning for money in most cases was not the right way to bring about the ultimate desire within one's own heart. I would like to show at this time, however, that the petitioning for wealth, abundant wealth, may be a proper procedure, and that the desire for it may be a proper thought. Among my intimate associates in the business world was the master of finance and big business, Mr. Arthur E. Stillwell, 1859 to 1928, who built more railroads in America than any other living being and who was a power on Wall Street. I have had the pleasure of being the advisor to Mr. Stillwell in many and great business propositions. Some of these were cast aside after brief consideration, sometimes upon my own private recommendation, while others were developed and enlarged into successful national operations solely through their personal effort it was my pleasure to institute. Mr. Stillwell was a person of remarkable mental and psychic development, always one who paid attention to hunches and the still small voice within. Mr. Stillwell often recalled how his weirdest hunch of all warned him not to make Galveston, Texas, which is located directly on the Gulf of Mexico, the terminus of his Kansas City Southern Railroad, because according to his hunch, that city was destined to be destroyed by a tidal wave, which actually happened 4 years later in 1900. Following his intuition, Mr. Stillwell found a more protected location on the Texas Gulf Coast and proceeded to build the city of Port Arthur and the Port Arthur Ship Channel and Harbor, making that city the railroad terminus. I'm glad to note that Mr. Stillwell published in some national magazines articles reviewing his mental and psychological contests with major business deals and the victories that came into his life. Many a time, through the application of mystical laws that were demonstrated to him in secret sessions we held while I was his silent partner during the course of a number of years. Mr. Stillwell's idea of wealth, however, was not wealth that gradually accumulated for him in the vaults of Wall Street, or even in his holdings in international marts. His idea of great wealth was the wealth of character and mental power. He considered that there was no power in the world as strong, as mighty, as indefatigable in its processes of overcoming the obstacles of life as the creative power of mind. His daily petition to the universal mind and consciousness was a prayer for the continuation of health, and especially of that power which was developing into his mental faculties. On many occasions, when Mr. Stillwell telephoned me late in the night to come to his private office in New York, he greeted me with a joyous grip and a hearty smile, and the exuberant claim that I am truly wealthy tonight, for I have a great idea. And as we would discuss his idea, I could not help noticing that he enjoyed the thought that he held. He cherished it like a loving child, not because he could see that the idea would someday produce money for himself and others, but because the idea was a thing alive with possibilities, and because it could be visualized and matured and eventually materialized into a vibrating, magnetic demonstration of mental laws. There was often no selfish interest in these ideas of his, for I have spent long hours with him discussing an idea that both of us realized we would have to pass on to another to turn into commercial form, for neither one of us would have the time nor the interest in developing the idea along business channels. But we could see in the idea a seed, and we could see this seed conscious and active with life and possibility. And often such ideas were passed over to his associates, some of whom were connected with the Standard Oil Company or with other large industries whose executives were acquainted with, and whose planners and builders were also individuals who appreciated the value of ideas and had the true standard of wealth in their consciousness. The person who has a good idea, a workable idea, and a creative mind, in which the idea can be mastered and visualized, is a person who has wealth, boundless wealth, potent wealth. The individual who has money, who has jewels, who has gold and silver in sufficiency or in abundance, but who has not the creative power to use such wealth, is not rich, but poor indeed. In petitioning the cosmic, or in using the psychological processes to bring wealth into one's personal environment, the less thought given to wealth as represented by money or gold or silver, the more quickly will petitioners attract to themselves the ways and means of attaining that which really will constitute wealth in this life. First of all, those who believe they are deprived of life's necessities or think they lack abundance, which should be theirs, should seek to build up the greatest wealth and blessing that is within their reach, and that is health. Perfect health with the harmonious functioning of all the inner faculties, cooperating with the functioning faculties of the outer consciousness, is one of the greatest blessings that anyone can possess. When such a health is in the body, the mind is keen and alert, and the creative powers of the divine mind working through the mortal mind are active and productive. We are then able to direct and control the obstacles that stand between us and the attainment of our desires. We were able to appeal to the minds of others without doubt and without hesitancy. We are truly masters of our lives and captains of our ships, and it is just as possible for us to steer our ship of fate and our life of destiny toward the goal of our dreams and toward the pot at the end of the rainbow, as it is for the experienced navigator to navigate a ship to a distant point on any horizon. The next great blessing is that of receptivity. To receive, one must give. As we give, we receive. It is the law of compensation. No person as yet has successfully avoided this law, nor found a way to contest and negate it. Our mind must become receptive to the intuitional impressions sent forth by the cosmic. It must become receptive to the still small voice within that seeks to guide and direct all of our actions, all of our thinking and planning. We must become receptive to the inspirational urges of the universal mind. We must become receptive to the cries and the needs, the desires and the wishes of the mass mind of humanity, so that we may hear the pleas of individuals and the hopes of groups of men and women who are sending out into universal space their creative ideas, seeking assistance in their fulfillment and materialization. The receptive mind must be able to sense what another needs, as well as what is needed by the self. The receptive mind must be attuned to the divine consciousness, that it may have the unlimited wisdom, the infinite knowledge, and the universal apprehension of things as they really are. To be receptive, one must be productive. One must contribute in order to expect anything in return. Life will give back precisely what one puts into it, and in a greater measure. Let those who seek great wealth beware of seeking gold, unless it be to materialize it into the beautiful things of life symbolized by the very nature of the metal. Let those who would be wealthy guard themselves against seeking for money. For money may come into our hands and pass out again without ever leaving its imprint of joy or a realization of the dreams that sought its coming. In the home and in business, let each of us daily, nightly, or at every possible opportunity, petition the cosmic for wealth of health, the wealth of mind power, the wealth of joy in living, the wealth of contentment that comes from adjusting ourselves to the conditions that surround us and then slowly improving them. Let us appeal for the wealth of happiness that exists in our lives, if we will but discover it, for the wealth of peace that the universe affords all its beings, for the wealth of life itself that permits us to know what we are, and that we are who we are, Such petitions for wealth as these, followed by prayers of thankfulness for what we have, will daily attune the individual to the abundant wealth of the universe. And each will soon find that affluence and prosperity, health and happiness, material blessings and spiritual benedictions are flowing freely and bountifully into the filling cup of life. Then, each one of us will know what really constitutes wealth and what is meant by mystics when they seek the attainment of wealth. And that concludes the Ancient Secrets to the Attainment of Wealth, as discussed by H. Spencer Lewis from the Rosicrucian Order. Now, there's some different and interesting ideas that come through these teachings that we haven't really discussed before. Understand, there is an obvious contradiction when he says to appeal to the cosmic. In this particular case, he's treating the cosmic or God, the source or the creator, as something outside of himself, something separate out there. I tend to view this as the cosmic is myself, and I'm appealing to this universal aspect of myself. And sometimes it's easier to appeal to the cosmic in this manner, fully understanding that you are the cosmic. But deep within the cosmic, we hold a lot of subconscious beliefs and archetypes that are built into our very understanding. That's where we carry our morality and our consciousness. So there are things that we won't do on a universal level when we're tapping into the subconscious mind or the universal mind, and we say we want money from this person and they don't need to give you the money yet and they've done nothing wrong. The universal mind is also connected to that person, and there's no need or desire for the universal mind to press or push that person to give you the money. But as he explains, if you desperately need this money and they owe it to you and they have forgotten because they've been indecisive or they have forgotten, then the universal mind can make that little nudge for the other person to push them to make that payment to you. The same is the idea of unrealistically expecting through these processes of reality creation that you're just going to wake up and money's going to be right there laying in bed with you. I have talked to people like this that have this idea that once I go through this process of imagining, somebody's going to knock on the door and they're going to open up a suitcase and the money's going to be there. And I see this often with people that desperately want to win lotteries and are buying lottery tickets all the time. Part of that is this expectation that you're somehow going to get something for nothing. While it may work in some cases, when appealing to the cosmic or universal mind, the higher power that is you and all things at the same time, there are some other considerations. You're not going to hurt anybody. It's not going to destroy anybody. It's not going to limit anybody. By your own efforts in receiving this money, you're not stealing it from someone else. The universal mind is aware of that. And so that's why there are cases where you appeal for money and it doesn't quite work out. This at least gives you a framework to understand why or why not your manifestations might not be occurring. The second half of this is obviously most important. The idea that true wealth is not from any money or gold that you have, but it's in the ideas that you carry. That's where the wealth is. And there's always the suggestion to listen to the still small voice within. Listening to your hunches and your intuition will guide you. You've created the intention and you've appealed to the cosmic. And now you will be given these signals. It's important for you to understand these signals will come to you, and you learn how to listen to that still small voice, and you become receptive. You become receptive to the things around you that will guide you into the wealth that you need. All things are possible. All things are possible. And I do say that, not saying that things are impossible, but that anything can happen, but there are natural laws that guide in the adjustment of reality. And these things we should be aware of. Now, the Rosicrucians believed that concentration involved having one absorbing idea at a time, to think of it in exclusion of everything else, and let your entire life, for the time being, cooperate with your concentration to bring into realization the thing that you desire. It's fully focusing and concentrating on that single idea without distraction. That's what they taught. Check out the episode on the Law of Assumption. It is an intensity that is required in this concentration. In other areas of the book, the idea of appealing to the cosmic is actually asking questions like, how can I put my interests and talents together to make a living? How can I get that loan that I need? Sometimes in appealing to the cosmic by asking questions and then listening to the still small voice within, we find the true wealth that is available to us already. So I'd love to know what you think of these new teachings from the Rosicrucians on attaining wealth and prosperity. I'd like to get your feelings on it. You can find all episodes of The Reality Revolution at therealityrevolution.com. And welcome to The Reality Revolution.